The insurance industry is at a turning point. In an era where climate change and environmental responsibility are at the forefront of global conversations, the insurance industry is taking center stage. Insurance is all about risk, the assessment of risk, the proper pricing of risk, and the ongoing management of that risk. And on the other side of the ledger, investing assets appropriately versus that risk. So there's really no industry better suited to adopt the basic principles of sustainability and responsible investing. Incorporating sustainability factors into the underwriting process and the management of investment assets not only bolsters risk mitigation efforts, but also promotes environmental stewardship, social responsibility, and more robust enterprise risk management practices. Welcome to Insuring Tomorrow, a series of podcasts where we take a deeper dive into the world of insurance and evolving trends in sustainability. I'm Emma Harper. I research sustainable companies at Sage Advisory. Sage is based in Austin and, as of this recording, manages over $24 billion in assets. Today, we're talking with Greg Cobb, who leads the insurance solution practice at Sage.
In terms of the role of insurance at Sage, I mean, we've actually been managing insurance company assets since day one back in 1996. So it's actually very much a part of our DNA for the last 27 years here in Austin. And when you think of Austin, I think most people have heard that the catchphrase is, you know, keep Austin weird. So I guess you can say that we've been keeping it weird, baby, and making insurance fun for over 27 years. And it just keeps getting better because today, the insurance industry actually represents our largest corporate line of business. We have over 58 relationships and 110 distinct portfolios, and we're operating or engaged with 22 domiciles, both offshore and onshore. And when you look at the breakdown with respect to industry types or within the industry, a little over 5% is life and health, roughly 60% is property and casualty, and the balance is in the wonderful world of art, the world of alternative risk transfer. And here we're talking about the captive space, whether it be single parent, pure captives, segregated sales, associations, or even risk retention groups. So it's well diversified across the industry, and we are fully engaged with the industry. And that includes engagement with associations, regulators, rating agencies, and service providers across the industry.
So a lot going on with insurance at Sage.
It's never a dull moment.
Absolutely. So with so many audiences, ESG and sustainability can sometimes be a touchier subject. And, you know, what are some of the observations or takeaways from these engagements with the industry in these forums that you're talking in?
Okay, so it has been a broad range of audiences, as we talked about. But more recently, we spoke at NARA, which is the National Risk Retention Association, where the theme there for that conference was innovating and advocating. And you can look at ESG and the responses that we've gotten from the industry through that particular lens, if you will. And so as industry participants see it, ESG is not really innovative anymore because it's been around for a while. And advocacy is a little suspect. And so ESG has been around for a while, but it's still not easy to spell. It's still not as easy as ABC, right? And the primary reason for that, again, this is coming from the insurance industry that we've talked to, it's acronym hell. You have the PRI, the CSR, the IASB, which is now the ISSB, the TBFD, TCFD, SDG, IFSR. And with all of that, the perception is that there are, you know, these are well-meaning organizations, but at the same time, they're self-serving organizations that are creating their own vernacular, their own ecosystem, their own world. And it's confusing, it's intimidating, and I will say as a practitioner, sometimes it is very annoying. And in the end, the industry, or ESG within the industry, is suffering from toxic label syndrome, which is really bad marketing, because that gives rise to phrases such as go woke, go broke, right? Which is actually, it's pretty catchy and it's pretty funny.
It is pretty catchy.
And it's really good marketing. It's really good marketing. It's genius, but at the same time, it is intellectually vacuous. In other words, it's just stupid. And then you have another divide that the insurance industry sees, and that's the red versus the blue. So on one side, you have the blue with their ethereal utopia, which is never, ever going to happen, ever. But then on the other side, you have the red that denies everything and advocates nothing. And what you have between the red and the blue for the insurance industry is this big purple pool of risk. And that risk, that pool of risk, needs to be priced appropriately. Now, ESG is not the end all to be all. It's not the answer, but it is an additional and valuable tool or element in terms of pricing the risk. How do you navigate these divides? And they're pretty wide. But if you really cut through all the noise and all the BS, if you will, ESG is really accessible and should be very straightforward to the insurance industry because it is a risk-driven agenda. In the end, what is it? You incorporate environmental, social, and governance factors into the analysis, selection, and management of risk. That sounds a lot like the other side of the balance sheet for insurance companies, the underwriting and liability risk. So both sides of the balance sheet need to talk to each other, a more holistic approach, and that factors into better enterprise risk management, or ERM.
So really what you're saying is it makes sense for insurance to be looking at this. I mean, they've been looking at it on the underwriting side. They should be looking at it on the investment side. It should be an overall approach for the insurance companies. So what are insurance companies doing right now? You seem to be saying that the U.S. industry is confused, uncertain, lagging as to the adoption and integration of ESG and sustainability.
Yeah, I think relative to the rest of the world, lagging is the key issue here. And there are a couple ways to look at that. I mean, you can look at the signatories to the PRI, or the Principles for Responsible Investing. And there are over 5,300 signatories worldwide.
Including Sage.
So 5,300 worldwide, a little over 1,000 in the United States. And with respect to insurance companies, at the general account level in the United States, only 10. So that is 1%. I would consider that lagging. But on the bright side, now that's at the general account. On the bright side, many of their investment management subsidiaries have signed on to the PRI. But again, at the general account level, it's lagging considerably in contrast to what you would see in the APAC regions, and in particular in Europe. And there's another organization, the PSI, which is the UN's Principles for Sustainable Insurance. And this is actually a little bit more of an aspirational organization. They're just looking to provide a framework for the evaluation and management of ESG risk across the value chain within the insurance industry. Now there are 159 signatories worldwide, and that's a third of the world's premiums. So that is substantial. There are 106 supporting institutions. But with respect to the signatories, in the United States, there are only three. And that's Marsh, Farmers, and AM Best, the insurance credit rating agency. So that's a positive step. So there's a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunity in terms of catching up with the rest of the world.
So we do seem to be lagging, but making progress. What about the direct financial and investment benefits?
That's a podcast in and of its own, right? But broadly speaking, and in summary, I mean, the hard evidence for financial and investment benefits, it really continues to mount over time. And whether you're looking at broad macro meta studies, you're looking at enterprise propositions from risk managers, or longer term, more granular investment studies, the weight of evidence is becoming more skewed to the positive. And over time, as we have better understanding, greater adoption, greater standardization, better metrics and more studies, the benefits, both financial and investment, should become more apparent to the overall industry.
So how do you move the needle in the insurance industry? Every industry has a fairly unique set of stakeholders. What does that look like for the insurance industry?
Yeah, the stakeholders, they can be pretty pesky critters. But if the financial investment benefits don't motivate you, the stakeholders just might do the trick, because in the insurance industry, there are many stakeholders and they are very motivated. I mean, first you have the shareholders at stock companies, and you have the policyholders at mutual companies. And they continue to put forward fairly aggressively ESG-related initiatives to senior management. And then you have company employees. You know, within the insurance industry, gender equality has taken center stage, as well as DEI more broadly. All you have to do is look at the NAIC's working group on DEI. And then there are your prospective employees. You know, the next gen cares deeply about ESG, and that's your hiring base on a go-forward basis. And then the third stakeholder, you can look at community relations, if you will. Here you're talking about media scrutiny and reputational risk. But then there are the key stakeholder, the consumers, right? The people that help drive the profitability. So You know, no one likes to pay their insurance premium, right? It's just a cost. There's no immediate benefit. So consumers are going to shop policies. They're prone to shop stories. You know, we're all human, right? So just give them a good story. So if you focus on the E in ESG, you pay the premium, you get a policy, and you save a penguin. Who doesn't love penguins? I mean, policies and penguins, baby. It's an easy sell. This is not hard for the insurance industry in terms of branding and distribution. And as a side note, you know, over the next 5 years, 75% of the workforce is going to be millennials, and you need to factor that into your consumer and your employee base. But beyond the direct stakeholders, management in the insurance industry is painfully aware of third-party assessments. And here we're talking about the regulators, the rating agencies, the reinsurers, risk managers, and peer groups. And, you know, all of these stakeholders and interested third parties are driving the demand for even partial adoption across the value chain. And it's actually, you know, it's working, again, maybe quietly, because AM Best recently came out with a report that suggested the 40 to 50% of insurance companies have already integrated ESG applications at some level in response to stakeholder demands. And they also suggest that that demand continues to increase despite all the noise that we've been talking about, all the divides that we were talking about earlier. And I mean, might want to emphasize quietly in many cases, and I'll give a real world example. We spoke at the Insurance Council of Texas, which is the Property and Casualty Association here in Texas. And in Texas, I think most people know ESG is persona non grata, but we still spoke. And, you know, we asked the question like, oh God, what's the audience going to be like? And the response was, well, you know, they're probably going to be a little more responsive and amenable to what you're saying, but they're just not going to raise their hand. So it's sort of a quiet integration and you just don't talk about it a lot.
So what about the other major players in the industry and their views towards ESG and sustainability? Here I'm referring to rating agencies, regulators, and let's say reinsurers.
Yeah, you know, across all the players that you just mentioned, there is more buy-in than you might expect. We expect it in Europe, we expect it in the APAC regions, but even more buy-in here in the United States. You know, the first one you mentioned with respect to the rating agencies here in the United States, you know, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch are all signatories to the PRI. And AM Best, for the insurance industry specifically, is a supporting institution of the Principles for Sustainable Insurance, the PSI. So all have incorporated ESG factors into the determination of credit risk. And it gets back to the fact that the insurance industry does see ESG as a risk-driven agenda or a risk management issue. So there is a clear and definite push there. With respect to the regulators, there's not a single global mandate yet, but they are grinding through it, and they really, really do want you to think about it. They are taking steps to make you think about it. All you have to do is look at the NAIC and their Climate Risk Disclosure Survey, which has now been adopted by 14 domiciles or states, including the District of Columbia. You can look at the SIF, or the Sustainable Insurance Forum. This is being done in conjunction with the UN, and it's made up of global supervisors and regulators. And somewhat redundant, maybe, to a degree, is the IAIS. Remember that acronym hell I mentioned earlier?
Yes, I do.
Here
we are.
It's just the gift that keeps on giving. So you have the IAIS, or the International Association of Insurance Supervisors, and this is a voluntary organization. So again, no mandate. And it's made up of regulators only in 200 jurisdictions across the globe. And that covers 90% of the world premiums. So you can see how the trickle-down effect might work with this. And here domestically, you have the California Department of Insurance with its roadmap for sustainable insurance. It's kind of a manual on the climate-related side. It's a little heavy-handed, but it's a very useful document, but it also gives an idea of what's to come. And then you have the New York Department of Financial Services, which has broadened out their climate-related reporting requirements to all insurance companies in New York, not just those with premiums greater than $100 million. And then you know, look at some of the islands. Bermuda, in 2019, had its ESG Stock Exchange Initiative, and they now have a jurisdictional initiative, and they're very serious about this. They want to become the climate finance capital of the world. So just do the math on that one, right? And then you have Guernsey, the Isle of Guernsey, which has an ESG accreditation for risk-bearing entities in their particular domicile. So, you know, the wave's building, and this wave from the regulators is pretty hard to stop. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned the reinsurers. You mentioned the reinsurers and the risk managers. Okay, these are the people that really, really understand risk on a global scale. They know how to price risk well, and they are fully engaged with ESG and sustainable practices across the entire value chain or the ecosystem, from underwriting to distribution to claims to investments.
Mm-hmm. That's something we definitely see when we're looking at reinsurers from an ESG perspective and analyzing them on our end, is they're at the top of the heap. They're always at the top of the peer group in terms of their practices.
Oh yes. They are the alpha. You don't mess with the alpha guys. You just don't mess with these guys.
So can you give some concrete examples, of all these?
Oh, across those?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, across that space? Sure. Let's see. Zurich Re. Okay, Zurich Re. Out of Europe. They're actually incorporating ESG standards into their code of conduct for service providers and consultants. And you have to attest to it and sign it on an annual basis. So it's only a matter of time before that creeps into the policyholder, because with respect to the policyholders, it's not only underwriting risk to Zurich Re, but you also represent reputational risk to Zurich Re. And across the reinsurance space, reputation is everything. And then you have, let's say, Marsh. Marsh has come up with an 18-point algorithm for basically evaluating ESG exposures across the enterprise and how much risk you actually do pose from an ESG standpoint. And then you have Aon, which has taken the principles for sustainable insurance, and they are embedding those into the captive framework in support of the parent or in support of enterprise-wide objectives. So across the reinsurance space and the risk manager space, they've been beating the drum for quite some time now, and now it's just getting a little bit louder.
So what are some of the first steps for an insurance company in moving towards even a partial adoption or integration of ESG?
It's a little loosey-goosey, if you will, because there is no manual. There's no mandated approach, if you will. So it's pretty wide open. But, there are always some, fairly broad brushes you could talk about. The first step, I think, is just determining how you approach ESG at the enterprise level. And that's going to start at the board level with respect to incorporating it into the mission statement, incorporating it into the culture of risk, and then finally determining what is actually practical in terms of application. So the board, it's really up to the board to convey to everyone in the organization across the value chain that this is a highly purposeful initiative. That's key. The second stage is really just building awareness and education across that value chain, at each stage of the value chain. And the third step is incorporating measures, even if at the margin, just the margin, just moving the needle a little bit. And again, it gets back to there's no one way to do it. There's no directive. It's going to be a function, again, of the mission statement, the culture of risk, and what is practical and in the end affordable for each insurance company.
Absolutely. I think that idea of practicality is something that we look at here at Sage as well in our practice, and the way that we look at risk and ESG and assessment when we're trying to analyze different companies from this kind of perspective, it has to be practical in nature. It has to be pragmatic. We're not looking for, as you were saying at the top, ethereal kind of, focus on ESG. We're looking for practical, pragmatic, financially material.
And along those lines, Ceres came out with a survey of the insurance industry, and they essentially looked at the woke of the woke, if you will, within the insurance industry, and they plotted the woke of the woke versus the UN's SDG, or Sustainable Development Goals. And as you well know, there are 17 of those goals. So you would think that the woke of the woke, right, would be engaged in all 17. But when you look across that spreadsheet or that table, if you will, what you will find that the only SDG, and it's the climate-related SDG.
13.
There you go. That's the only SDG that everyone is aligned with.
Right.
And then it's pretty much all over the map. So you'll have companies that they're focusing on maybe 6 of the SDG, or 4 of the SDG, or 5 of the SDG. So again, why are they doing that? Because those 4, 6, 9, or 10, if you will, are consistent with their mission statement.
Right.
They're consistent with their culture of risk, and they're practical to their business and affordable. So again, it gets back to there's no mandate. You know, it is what you want it to be.
So, Greg, as you're talking, you seem to be throwing a lot of R words out there. So regulators, reinsurers, rating agencies in the insurance industry.
That's actually, you know, Emma, you know, pretty funny because earlier we were talking about how spelling ESG is not as easy as ABC. And I think you've just pointed out that it's actually easier than that. Because, you know, ESG in the end can be spelled, for the insurance industry, can be spelled with a big fat capital R, right? To your point, risk reduction, reward enhancement, rating agency buy-in, regulatory scrutiny, reinsurer alignment, risk manager awareness. And if you ignore all of that, you're going to subject yourself to significant reputational risk. And even with that, there's more little R's along the way. You have risk to your hiring practices, risk to your distribution, and risk to your tower and panel of reinsurers. So in the end, it might be a really good idea for everybody to learn how to spell R.
So yeah, so basically saying everything sums up to the insurance industry to a lot of R's, and that's the only acronym we really need to understand here is the big R's.
The big R. It's really, really easy.
I like that. I do like it. It's catchy. So when you put it all together, there seems to be a lot of wins. It really sounds like a win-win for the insurance industry.
Yeah, but the question is, the real question is, how many wins in a win-win, right? And at Sage, we count 10. With respect to even partial integration, partial adoption, number one, you're going to have a more defined culture of risk, stronger corporate governance, more robust ERM practices. You're going to reduce your potential reputational risk. You will be able to experience differentiating branding and marketing benefits. You're going to get out in front of the regulators. You're going to get out in front of the rating agencies, greater alignment with your reinsurers, and you're going to have better opportunities for risk-adjusted returns. And if you move the needle just a little bit, the most important, number 10, you never have to sit through another ESG session podcast. Even at the margin. You know, but all that being said, I mean, I think we're leaving somebody out. On top of it all, you might save a penguin. Okay? And what could be better than saving? It's all about the penguins, baby. It's all about the penguins.
Well, thank you for your time today. It was really great to talk to you about the insurance industry and where we're at.
All right. Thanks, Emma. I look forward to talking to you on the next podcast.
Sounds great.
Sage Advisory Services is a registered investment advisor that provides investment management services for a variety of institutions and high net worth individuals. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as investment advice or an offer or solicitation with respect to the purchase or sale of any security, strategy, or investment product. Investors should make their own decisions on investment strategies based on their specific investment objectives and financial circumstances. All investments contain risk and may lose value. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. For additional information on Sage and its investment management services, please view our website at www.sageadvisory.com or refer to our Form ADV, which is available upon request by calling 512-327-5530.